Welcome back to The Rush. Hope you're having a great Friday. Glad you're with us. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause. Time now for our Smart Speakers panel. Always love this time of day. And we are joined by Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT and Company. And first up, we're going to talk about one of the many housing announcements over the past week by both the federal government and the provincial government, also making some announcements. But let's focus on the Liberals' plan federally. They've released a comprehensive plan that they say will help solve the housing crisis. And before we go to our smart speakers on it, let's hear from the Prime Minister.
This isn't simple slogans. It's not some YouTube video filled with half-baked ideas and inaccuracies. This is a serious plan, built after consultation with Canadians, with experts, with builders. It's a plan that's actually going to make a difference in the lives of Canadians. But it will also require provinces and territories to step up and meet the level of ambition that Canadians expect them to.
So the federal Liberals will come out with their budget this Tuesday, April 16th. This housing plan, part of it, it includes more than $1 billion for homelessness, new tax incentive for builders and developers, and a countrywide effort to build more housing on public lands. So let's start with you, Bruce Arthur. What do you think of the plan?
I'm more interested in what the real experts think of the plan. So I've kind of looked at what they've been saying. And the biggest part of this, isn't all new stuff. Some of this stuff has been in the pipeline for a while. But the biggest part is the accelerated capital cost allowance for purpose-built rentals. So one of the reasons that we stopped building as many rental buildings is basically because that was eliminated a few decades ago. And bringing this back is, according to the experts that I'm reading, this is going to help build a ton of apartment buildings. And that's a huge part of all of this. Like, remember, the housing crisis is such a, it's such a giant problem that no one piece is going to solve it, but as many different pieces as you can put into it, that like more rental housing is better. The other parts of this deal, like, there is ambition in this deal. The biggest thing that I would worry about is that you have to work with the provinces. Alberta just is passing legislation saying that municipalities can't take federal money to build housing right now. There's a lot of hostile witnesses, as you would maybe put it, in the provinces. And I think that, to me, is the biggest problem with almost any federal plan these days.
Genevieve, it seems to me that to make this work, though, you have to have cooperation on the municipal, the provincial, and federal levels. I would prefer to see the feds maybe just write checks and back off a little bit and leave it to the local communities to figure out what we need in their communities. What's your take on this?
So I think we've seen the risks of, you know, writing checks without any strings attached. And I actually do really think that a lot of the municipalities across Canada are really on board with this kind of ambition. And so, you know, I think that what the Prime Minister said today really hit the nail on the head. And I do hope our provincial government, especially here in Ontario, because we know that they've been obstructionist around some of this stuff around gentle density, I hope they're listening. Because, you know, to echo something that the Prime Minister said today, you know, we're way too late to be tinkering around the edges of this crisis. Like, it needs to be solved. And do I actually think any government can claim to solve it on their own? No, I don't. But do I think that that should be the goal, and having levels of government work together? Yes, it absolutely should be. You know, from a purely political analysis perspective on this, I think it's further evidence also that the Trudeau government and their team is really, you know, kind of hitting their stride in identifying where they think that they can start to move people back into their camp. And they're really laser focused on that, because this was completely designed to speak to those Gen Zs, those millennials, and their parents, who are really, really concerned about, you know, whether their kids are going to be able to even live in the same community where they grew up, because the cost of housing, whether it is to buy or to rent, is just far too high.
Well, on the demand side, yesterday also the feds also had some announcements. They doubled basically the amount that you could pull from your RSP to $60,000 in order to buy a home. Also created 30-year amortization periods. This is for first-time buyers for new builds. So, what did you think of that element of their kind of blitz on housing announcements? Genevieve, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be something that you work on all fronts, right? It has to be on the supply side, it has to be on the demand side, and you have to give young people, especially, all of the tools at their disposal to be able to get into housing. And I think, you know, there was an interesting thing that Bruce picked up on too about purpose-built rentals, because I think a big part of this needs to be the dignity of renting, because that is going to be the reality for some people, is that rental is going to be, you know, how they put a roof over their head for their adult life. And I think that creating more purpose-built rental, more rental that is designed for people to live in for a long term, is really important to starting to crack into this crisis as well.
Bruce, we had Melissa Lantzman on the John Moore show this morning, Moore in the Morning, and she says that if elected, the federal conservatives will defund the CBC. Let's listen. Let's have a quick listen to her.
We can certainly cut the $1 billion from the CBC once and for all.
You want to pull the plug on the CBC? That's an actual policy now?
That is an actual promise, and we'll do that as soon as we are elected.
Melissa Lantzman talking about the plan to pull the plug on the CBC. Bruce, what's your take?
So I have a cousin who lives in the interior of BC. She's a nice lady. She's in her early 50s, I would say now.
Yep.
She has very little idea how the world works. Like when you talk to her about a number of different political issues, and this goes up to and including vaccines, she's misinformed. And when you ask her where she gets her information, there's no local news that could give her mm-hmm. information. The only place that actually services where she lives in any meaningful way, and will also publish the kind of information that would help her navigate things like vaccines and politics and stuff like that, so that she has the right facts, is the CBC. And part of me wonders whether this article of faith that the conservatives have to remove the CBC from our lives is based on that, based on creating more information deserts in this country so that they can be replaced with AstroTurf BS pretend media. Honestly, I think it's almost to that level, because the CBC, we can always talk about how the CBC works and how it mm-hmm. should work and the mandate and all of that. The idea that we should destroy it tells you a lot about how careless and reckless this conservative party is. And it honestly, it's one of the things that makes me almost feel sick when I think about a conservative supermajority in this country and the damage it could do, lasting damage.
Genevieve, I also think that defunding the CBC, the promise of it, will destroy any support that the conservatives may try and garner in Quebec, where Radio-Canada is such a part of the fabric of life there, that this could backfire in a very big way for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, full disclosure, you're talking to a journalist in Bruce and a former journalist in me, and I used to work for the CBC, so I'll put that out there. But I do really think that, to your point, there is still a role for CBC to play, especially in local news. And I saw the Fifth Estate promoting something today, a program that they're planning to do for the next season, where they're, you know, asking local communities to you know, get in touch, because they want to go out and do investigations in local communities, because there aren't journalists there to do right. that investigative journalism in local communities anymore. Like it's, you know, really kind of mind boggling to think about. And so I guess, you know, what I worry about is the CBC a straw man for journalism in general, for, you know, the mainstream media in general, when we hear Pierre Poilievre talk about it? Like, what I worry about is this about more than, you know, a Canadian institution that's funded by taxpayers? Is it actually about, you know, the role of the mainstream media in Canada and the role that it plays in giving people, to Bruce's point, that unbiased information that we all clearly need?
You're listening to The Smart Speakers on The Rush on News Talk 1010. That's Bruce Arthur, the Toronto Star columnist, and Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT & Company. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. We'll talk about how the Liberals have accused conservatives of using AI for amendments to jobs bill as the votes loom and could mean a 15-hour session of voting. What is your weirdest, earliest job? Both of you must have had some strange jobs leading up to the kind of work that you do today. We'll find out all about that when we come back. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson. You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010.
put a spring in your step on this Friday with those tunes. I love it. Welcome back to The Rush. Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you. And we're continuing our smart speakers panel. We're joined by Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT and Company, and Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist. Bruce, want to ask you about this story. Some leaked documents apparently show that Loblaws is marking up butter by 54%. Wow. What do you think of this?
Well, as someone who used to work in a supermarket, no, that's not going to be one of my weird jobs from early in life. I'd be interested to see how this compares to industry-wide standards, because, I mean, there is a huge amount of infrastructure and, like, a lot of things need to be paid for before you or I buy that butter, right? Like, you got to transport stuff. You need people to stock the shelves. You need to pay to keep the lights on. You got rent. You all these things. So I'd like to know where that stands in terms of competitors in Canada. Then I'd like to see what the comparison would be in, say, the United States, right? Which is kind of close to us. It's not that different in terms of how they do things. I think there's a sweet spot between a company being allowed to make a profit and a company absolutely gouging its customers. I suspect that since the pandemic, that the grocery stores in particular have done a little more of the second one rather than the first one.
Genevieve, let's talk about the Liberals and how they've accused conservatives of using AI for amendments to the jobs bill as votes loom. So the amendments, there are like 20,000 changes the conservatives proposed to Bill C-50 last fall at a House of Commons committee. And now it's being suggested that the conservatives have come up with all of these amendments using artificial intelligence, not so much to, you know, honestly want to change the bill, but just to gum things up, just to take forever to go through it all. So is this a dirty trick, or is it a legitimate use of the political process and maybe even a legitimate use of AI?
Yeah, I mean, I know that the Conservatives have said that they didn't use AI to come up with this, and it certainly wouldn't be the first time that these kinds of, you know, methods have been used to create some political theater around something in the House of Commons. You know, we've heard about these all-night sittings. You know, I wonder how much Canadians even tune into that and how much impact they're making with this kind of stuff. Like, I think it's really just to frustrate the other side. I just want to take a step back, because this legislation is about preparing our economy to move into a world where we're not so reliant on fossil fuels. And I think what's really disheartening for me overall is to see climate and climate change being turned into a stick to batter progressives with. Like, that's really kind of troubling to watch. And, you know, okay, so the carbon levy is one thing. I get that. I think challenging governments to be a little bit more bold and more creative is perhaps, you know, not a terrible outcome of some of, you know, the campaigning that we've seen the polio conservatives do. I agree people are struggling. I agree that we need to think really creatively about how we tackle climate change, but not figuring out how to transition our economy to be able to create a successful and thriving Canada that does not rely on fossil fuels is, it's crazy, and it's sticking our heads in the sand. And I think that that's what sticks out to me about applying, you know, that kind of political theater to this kind of a piece of legislation, because I think we ought to be treating it more seriously than that.
Bruce, the Liberals contend the bill isn't meant to kill energy jobs, but rather lay out the way to create more of them in the renewable energy sphere. What's your take?
Okay, so on the 19,600 amendments that were alleged to have been AI, I'm either impressed that the Conservatives managed to put together 19,600
amendments. That's a lot of amendments.
To an 18-page bill and have this much of a waste of time, energy, and on the same subject that Genevieve just spoke so eloquently and I think correctly about. Or they used AI and they're just as lazy as everyone else is using AI right now. I am really disheartened by the whole debate over the carbon tax. What every economist will tell you is that it's the easiest thing in order to fight climate change. It's the thing that costs us the least and that gives us the least headache. And this is the holy fight we're having over it. And we have this as an analogous part of that, is that it is irresponsible leadership not to prepare people for what's actually going to happen. And what's actually going to happen is oil and gas are going to peak and they're going to drop. And that we do need to have some kind of preparation for the next phase of how the world's going to look. So that's why this bill, the fight against it is really disheartening. I would agree with Genevieve on that.
Well, ChatGPT-4, it dropped about a year ago, around 12 months ago. Did either of you ever conceive that it would be used for this purpose, for basically coming up with 20,000 amendments to pretty much filibuster?
I mean, having worked in government, yes, I probably did conceive that that could happen. I mean, look, I think that there are lots of really useful ways for us to be using AI. And I think, you know, in my world, and I think in all different sectors, we're grappling with exactly what those look like. But, you know, again, I think we have, like, look at the bigger picture here. Is this actually the right application? And you know, to Bruce's point, what a colossal waste of time for, you know, a lot of, frankly, quite smart people to be involved in doing something like this.
We don't have a ton of time left, so I want to ask you both, weirdest job you've ever had. We're talking about this because there was a Globe and Mail editorial from a gentleman whose first job was in a funeral home. Richard and I have had our share of weird jobs. Bruce Arthur, strangest job you've ever had?
First job was a donut shop. Not weird, just delightful. Second job was a fabric factory. Not weird, except for the fact that we were rating about the weirdest part of town in Vancouver. But the third job was a job where it was like an electronic payments company. And I wasn't sure what the company did. And no one seemed to be that sure what the company did. But we all just kept going in and doing it anyway.
Well, if the check clears, it's a hit. That's what they say. Genevieve, have you had some weird jobs?
Yeah, I worked at a donut shop too, and I think it was actually more amazing than weird. But I would say the weirdest one is probably, you know, I worked for a small town summer theater company, and you could literally make a television show out of some of the antics. It was drama.
You both worked at a donut shop. When you're a donut shop employee, what's the deal with eating the product? Like, do you get one donut per shift, or how does it work?
I think we did. I think we did get free donuts. You know what? Yep. The biggest thing that I learned, like, it probably the job that prepared me the most for life, because shout out to St. John, New Brunswick. St. Johners are so serious about how they take their coffee. I really learned a lot about good client service.
Well, and I've been told that, like, the top job at a donut shop is filling the jelly donuts. There's a trick to it, and you have to know how to do it.
I would disagree with that. I've done every job in a donut shop. I would say working in the front is the best deal, because if you're a baker, you're getting up really early and dealing with hot oil. If you're filling donuts, then it's just a lot of muck. It's just a lot of stuff on your fingers and a lot of that. If you're up front, you're just making people happy. And if you close the shop at the end of the day, what you do
is
just
grab 2 dozen. Not always making people happy, Bruce Arthur. Not always.
I would say it's a very high percentage, Genevieve. And at the end of the day, you strap like 2 dozen donuts to your bike handlebars, pour yourself a hot chocolate, and ride all the way home.
That's the thing. In those kind of places where they're not going to sell the donuts the next day, you want to work the night shift because you get to take home whatever's left. That was the Smart Speakers, Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT & Company. Thank you both, and have a great weekend.
Happy Friday.
Bye.
When we come back, Tim Hudak will join us. He's the former leader of the Ontario Conservatives, and he's now with the Ontario Real Estate Association. And we'll talk about the plan to solve the housing crisis that the Liberals have just released. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson. You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010.